Rob Nation.
You're invited to take your seat.
Take a seat.
At the Warriors Roundtable.
It's a three. In and out. Rebound. Peyton. Out to Curry. Let's it fly. Three ball. Left corner pocket.
Welcome to the table. The exclusive home of your Golden State Warriors. 95-7 the game.
Curry fires away. Three ball. Above the break.
Here's Kevin Dana.
Right there.
And Gary St. Jean.
Good evening, folks. We welcome you to Warriors Roundtable on 95.7 The Game. Kevin Dana alongside Gary St. Jean taking your calls all hour long. Hit us up, 888-957-9570. Again, that number, 888-957-9570. Reminding you that the Warriors 2023-24 season is presented by Kaiser Permanente. A lot to get to this week. We'll dissect the road trip. We'll take a look ahead to the homestand. We'll talk a little Andrew Wiggins returning to the lineup. Good to have him back in the fold. And we'll also take a look at the Western Conference outlook as it stands. Heading into this evening, Tuesday, March 5th. So overall, Saint, let's just kind of give the big picture view of the road trip. And look, I know it ended in blowout fashion. Losing by 52 is never fun. But hey, 3-1 on a road trip is 3-1. You'll take it.
Well, I think finally you and I got one right.
Yes.
We've been kind of optimistic and fell short a few times.
Yep.
But, you know, when I was with Nelly, he used the expression the same thing as Steve Kerr. When you got a game like that one in Boston, you just take it and you flush it down the toilet and you don't even look at it and you just go forward and you say to yourself, 3-1, heck of a trip. Got done what we wanted to get done, and those days happen in the NBA. It just got magnified a little bit on national TV. I know I was ready. I really was. I was on the couch. I had the popcorn ready. A bottle of red was breathing, and okay. I figured I was there for like 3 hours. Next thing you know, I was shutting it off, doing something else about a half an hour later.
Well, I mean, it started out as the first 6 minutes were really entertaining, good. Very close, and then the rest of the game happened. But look, I was on the road trip with the team, and I could tell you the team was not worried at all after the Boston game. They moved on very quickly. The team was in good spirits because they did what they needed to do on that road trip. And you know, we talked about it coming out of the All-Star break. I thought they needed to go 5-2 in their 3-game homestand and 4-game road trip, and they did just that.
Bingo. Exactly spot on. And I'll be interested as we go through the hour to get your feel on things on the road. You know, traveling with the team and being right there at the games, it's a little bit different. You have a little bit different perspective. And when you get out on the road, you know, it's just the fellas. You're all together. And to get that done, I think, is terrific. And now a little homestand, maybe some good luck tomorrow. Maybe Adekunpo may not play, and you know, then you got a couple you may be able to win. So, hey, this is great. We're going to delve into the Western Conference later on. But boy, oh boy, I'm optimistic. I really am.
Yeah, so let's work our way forward in time. Let's start with the Knicks game on this road trip. I'm curious, Saint, are you a big kind of savor the moment kind of aura of a building place? Because everyone talks about how Madison Square Garden is the Mecca, and yes, it was a really cool place to, you know, broadcast a game for the first time. I'd been there for a Knicks-Spurs game 20-something years ago. I'd been there for the 2012 NIT Championship when Stanford won it. I believe they defeated UMass that year, if I remember correctly. So I'd been there a couple times, but I hadn't, you know, worked a game there. And so that was it was cool to be there. But before I get your thoughts on Madison Square Garden and getting caught up in kind of the aura of a place, I do want to head out to the phone lines because we got a call from Fish in Oakland who wants to talk about the Warriors' chances in the playoffs. What's going on, Fish?
Hey, guys, great to hear from you, and I really appreciate the show, and I'd love to hear the optimism, because I'm not feeling as optimistic. I'm looking at the Vegas lines, the Warriors 42-1 to win it all. I'm looking up and down that Western Conference, and I'm not seeing how the Warriors beat any of these teams in a best-in-7. So want some of your optimism to roll off on me, and just curious who you guys really think the Warriors match up well against in the West, and what's the best way the playoffs can play out that the Warriors might have a chance to make the finals.
Well, Fish, that's a darn realistic appraisal. I'm not painting the rosiest picture, but I feel a heck of a lot better than I did about 2 months ago. And I'm going to share with you, there's been, and teams deal with this, there's been ongoing injuries and situations, whether it's Draymond's or Wiggins and Chris Paul getting hurt and on and on and on. But don't you just think from the eye test and the feel that the team looks really good? Everybody
yes.
looks like they fit. They're ready to play. They've got their attitudes are great. And I'm really looking forward to the finish. Now, with that said, and we're going to talk over the standings. Yes, you're right. The West is, I have so much respect for all these teams. I will share this with you. I think they can climb from, well, we're percentage points, 9 and 10. But yeah. I think they can go, they can get up to 6. I've changed my evaluation because I'm going to talk about some of these other teams coming down a little bit. I think the Warriors have like the 5th or 6th easiest schedule. And I will say this to you. I don't know where they're going to get to. But if I'm one of those teams up top, especially OKC and Minnesota, which aren't really battle playoff tested, I'll tell you what. I wouldn't want to play the Warriors and I wouldn't want to play the Lakers just because yeah. of the players that are on those two teams. So, you know, and then you just don't know. A 7-game series. Now, I'm not going to make them the favorite. Obviously, I think Denver and the Clippers are the two best in the West. But you never know. And I think at this time, we just need to cherish the last decade and be so grateful to watch Steph Curry play every night and just appreciate the way these guys are playing. Maybe it's not the championship, but you're watching some darn good basketball now.
No, you really are. Fish, thanks for the call. And look, right now they're a half game behind the Lakers for 9th, but they're just 2.5 back of Phoenix for 6th, who's playing the Nuggets tonight, and they don't have Devin Booker. So I'd say there's a better than 50% chance that by the end of tonight, Golden State is going to be 2 games back of the Phoenix Suns. They're 2 games back of Sacramento, who just tricked off a huge lead last night to the Chicago Bulls, and a game and a half back of Dallas. While they were playing really well right after the acquisition of P.J. Washington and Daniel Gafford, they've kind of slid back a little bit, and they also got waxed by the Boston Celtics recently, and of course there was the Max Strus 59-footer that the Cleveland Cavaliers hit on them, so they've kind of fallen back a little bit. Look, the path to a top 6 seed is getting clear, and I will say this, Saint, before we work back to the Knicks game, I think this year's team is better than last year's team, and they had a favorable matchup in the first round with an unproven in the playoffs Sacramento Kings team. That team went to the second round, gave the Lakers a pretty hard 6 games. I don't see like why, if I think this team is better than last year's team. So like I do see a route out of the first round for Golden State, and look, there are unproven teams at the top of the bracket again with Minnesota and Oklahoma City.
You're exactly right. You're painting the picture perfectly. And the two teams that you just say, you don't have an answer for Jokic. And then the Clippers with Leonard and George and that crew, they look awful strong. So all these other teams are very beatable. And Kev, I've given you the Doug Moe theory in the past, haven't I, about the way you come up with a plus-minus thing? You take your home losses, for example. Pelicans have 12, but they have 18 road wins. So 18 minus 12 is a plus 6. And you go down the line, and it's very interesting. The Warriors are plus 2. The other team that's in the plus column really big is the Kings. They've got 11 home losses, but 18. Road wins. They played the most road games of any of these teams, like from 5 to 10. So this is, you know, I'm crazy. I'm nuts. I look at the stats every single morning, probably at night too. And this is great. I love this. The team that I've changed my opinion on is the Pelicans. I think they're going to hang where they are. They may be better than I thought they were. But as Fish was saying, hey, we're not being overly optimistic. We're being realistic, but yet the Warriors still they can really create a path.
Yeah, we got another call. This from Robin in San Francisco wants to talk about the playoff/play-in chances of Golden State. What's up, Robin?
What's up, you guys? So, the dude who called me a Fish. Okay, Fish, if you're listening, we got to worry about getting into the play-in, not the playoffs, okay? Get worried about the play-in, okay? And I haven't looked at the rest of the schedule. Saints say we have the easiest schedule. Yeah, if those teams are below 500, which is a proven fact that we have beaten those teams, because anything above 500, we can't win that. That's because we haven't beaten them, you know, above 500 teams. And that's because the Warriors are a 500 team. And if that, okay? And I want to address a very unpopular opinion, but last year, the reason why we got to that second round is because of Steph Curry with the Kings. He put them on their back, and he got them there. I think Steph Curry's a little tired. And another reason why they had a better team, they have a little better players and lineups and whatever this year. But the fact of the matter is the veterans had to humble themselves because they felt like there was two teams last year, us against them, which is the new against the old, and then they battling their opponents. Now, to me, it seems like the entitlement of the veterans have gone and welcomed in the youngsters because they see that they're not going to win without it, that this is just the way it is. And that's how I look at it, the difference in the teams from last year. Maybe the talent is better. And then people want to blame Kerr. Well, I want to say this to the Warrior fans. You need talent to win, okay? And the Warriors don't have the talent like they used to. Point blank, they'll be lucky to get into the play-in. That's my take. Bye, you guys.
Well, I think it's a great breakdown, Kev. I will only disagree with one point. They're going to get in because Utah is number 11, and they're like 4 or 5 games behind. But points well taken about this team versus last year's, and this team really embracing the young guys, and they really fit cohesively. New pieces coming in, two rookies. And, it feels good. I just like watching this action now. And if Wiggins comes back, you're going to get this very important concept across. He is your point of attack defender. He's going to guard the best perimeter guy. That used to be Clay's job night in and night out. A proven wing defender in the NBA right now that can guard 1, 2, and 3. Oh, man, is he valuable. That is a very, very key piece. So to have him back and, you know, Draymond, the orchestra leader back there, Kuminga's improving defensively, and you got veteran crew in the backcourt, and you never can have too many Podzinskis and Paytons. You just love those energy, tough guys. But those are all very, very good points.
Yeah, Robin, thanks for the call. And like Saint said, the Jazz are 5 games back of the Warriors, who are in 10th right now, and the Jazz are fading fast. They semi-punted on this season when they traded away 3 rotation players at the trade deadline, and Kelly Olynyk, Simone Fontecchio, and Ochai Agbaji, and then the Rockets are 6 games back, and they just aren't quite ready to make a push. We got to take a break, but first we want to let you know that the Santa Cruz Warriors are playing at Chase Center. Bring your family on Sunday, March 10th, to watch the Santa Cruz Warriors take on the RGV Vipers. First 10,000 fans in the building will receive a longboard loony bobblehead. Presented by Adobe. Get your tickets now at ChaseCenter.com. When we come back, we'll talk more about the road trip, the plane troubles headed to Toronto, and more right here on 95.7 The Game.
Kevin Dana and Gary St. Jean are holding court.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
At the Warriors Roundtable.
You can't handle the truth!
Curry, screened by Draymond. Curry gets free for 3.
Got it! On 95.7 The Game. Now back to Kevin Dana and Gary St. Jean.
Luis Miguel is coming to San Francisco on April 11th. Don't miss his 2024 tour live at Chase Center. Get your tickets now at ChaseCenter.com. You're rocking with the Saint and Kevin Dana here on 95.7 The Game for Warriors Roundtable. You want to call us up? We thank Fish and Robin for calling in the first segment. The number, 888-957-9570. Again, that number, 888-957-9570. I do want to get back quickly to the Knicks game, talk about Madison Square Garden a little bit, because I'm curious, are you saying someone who, like, savors the arena, the moment? I should probably do a better job of that. I just want to get in there and call a game. Let's roll the ball on the court and play ball. A court is a court is a court is a court. Now, I understand it is the Mecca, as they call it, and it was cool to be in there, but I'm more concerned about the action.
Well, that's the simple breakdown, but the more you go to these places over my 40 years plus, I know we never go in the front door. You're always going in the back. Sometimes you might take the bus right underneath. Now I think when you go to New York on 42nd Street, you go up and then you've got to walk up a big, big ramp.
Yeah.
The old days, we used to get dropped off at curbside on the side, go through a security thing, and then we take an elevator. But it was a special elevator, because when you got on that elevator, it was the elevator that the elephants went on for the circus, for Barnum and Bailey Circus. So sometimes if you caught it right on the road trip and you went in right after the circus, holy moly, did you have stinkage. It was phenomenal. Now, then you get up off the elevator and you walk down the hallway and you go into both locker rooms. And there you start to see the pictures of the most famous people who've played there. Now, whether it was Muhammad Ali fighting, whether it was Sinatra, the Beatles, Billy Joel, you name it, and then they're great great players. I go way back. I love those old Knick teams with the Buescher and Bradley and Reed and Frazier, and got to know a lot of those guys. And so it's deep, deep history in that building. And of course, you look across the way, like when you go down to the Lakers, and you know Robert De Niro's there, or whoever else lives in New York. It's a great, great thing. Bette Midler or whatever. So. I always enjoyed that aspect of it, too.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the ramp up. I'm a little crazy. I counted the steps. It's a 140-step walk up
purpose. That
big ramp. Yeah, making you get a calf workout before you even play in the game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I'm sure there's some way the Knick players have some around-the-corner elevator to get them upstairs. No doubt about it.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. That was a nice win for Golden State. Yeah, I understand that they don't have Julius Randle, Mitchell Robinson, and OG Anunoby, and when that team is full squad, they could potentially be a top-three team in the Eastern Conference. They were there right there with the Cleveland Cavaliers while the Bucks were slumping. But still, you win by 11 in the Garden. The Knicks made a bit of a push in the fourth quarter. They cut it to 4. But, man, Moses Moody's defense, that was the one thing that really stood out to me there in the second half. On Jalen Brunson, blocking shots, blocking a three, blocking pull-up jumpers. I mean, the guy was all over the place.
Well, to your point earlier, quality wing perimeter defenders with length. That's what you need in the league. And he kind of replaced Wiggins and did a terrific job. And, you know, you and I have been chatting about this. It's nothing that he hasn't done. It's just these guys in front of him probably have more experience. And he's going to be a long-time rotation player with the Warriors or with another team. And this kind of solidified it for you and me, because he really had a nice road trip.
I mean, the 4 starts, he averaged about 12 points per game.
Yep.
He more or less shot it. Well, there were a couple of games where he wasn't hitting. I mean, the games he wasn't hitting, basically the Knicks game, he was a plus 23, even though he was 0-for-4 from 3. He had the best plus minus on the team because his defense was so spectacular. And then the next night, we will get into the nightmare of a travel day in a little bit. But it was Moses Moody who really helped keep them afloat early in that game, and then had a really good start to the Boston game as well.
Yeah, you know what? That's maturity and confidence, and it's teammates, veteran teammates and coaches believing in him. And boy, that means a lot to a young player. And you're just really thrilled for the guy. That's made his season so far. And if need be, there'll be a spot for him to come in if there's another injury. And you never know. There may be matchups that now he's earned the faith and trust of the team, and he may get another shot to get in there.
So after the game, let's break this down a little bit because I lived through it. So the game ends around 10 o'clock local time. We're out there probably around 11. You know, you got to fight through a little bit of the city traffic. I mean, you know, the city never sleeps, as they say. So you're flying out of Newark, probably on the plane at midnight. And, you know, at first we're sitting around. You know, it takes a little while. It was the Wizards-Lakers game. A lot of people were watching that. And I'm not – this is like – I've done a few road games in my day in the NBA, but this was, I've done 16 NBA games total. So I am a quarter, not even a quarter of the way through my rookie season, if you will, as far as number of games broadcast in the NBA. I thought they were holding the plane so the coaches and the staff could watch the end of the Wizards-Lakers game to see if the team moved up in the standings or not. That's how naive I was to the whole thing. So the game finishes, and I'm like, all right, we're going to get to take off now. Uh-uh. We're hanging around. People are saying, we might go back to the hotel. But we find out that there is a plane coming that will land at 4 a.m. And there's mechanical issues with the plane that they were on. And so we'll take the plane that lands at 4 a.m. We are on this one plane that won't be able to take off for 4 hours. We transfer over to this next plane, take off at 5 a.m. from Newark, get in town. It's about an hour and a half flight, maybe a little less than that. You got to go through customs, which is not like going through customs as a normal person. It is very expedited, at least on the way into Canada. It was a little bit more of a hassle, quote unquote, getting back into the States. Actually had to walk through the airport with the normal people, which it doesn't happen a whole lot in the NBA from what I've been able to tell. But we get to the hotel at 7:15 a.m. We were so late in to Toronto that we got caught in the morning traffic in. And I thought, Saint, that, all right, you know, I had heard from Bob Fitzgerald. I was, you know, sitting near him on the plane going through customs. He's like, you usually have one or two bad travel stories a season. But I was talking with Klay Thompson after the game on our post-game show, and he said he had never gotten into an arena or into a new town that late, and he said, obviously, hopefully we don't make a habit of it. And other coaches who'd been around the league for quite some time said that this was the worst travel experience they had had. So apparently, just my luck that I caught one of the worst travel days in Golden State Warriors history.
Well, the fun thing is you're lucky you didn't fly into Teterboro, which is the private airport, because they wouldn't have been able to get that other plane in there. And, you know, Newark's big, and so they were able to get a plane in there. When I was in Sacramento, you know what the Thule fog is, that really thick fog they get up there? We had a number of games where we'd come back in, and the name of the plane was Round Ball 1. Well, Round Ball 1 couldn't land in Sacramento, so we'd go down, say, to Modesto or Stockton, but then they couldn't take us. So then we'd go to Oakland, and then we'd have to bus back up. Oh. So we had 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning trips. But that, you beat me with that one, with 7 o'clock. That's something else. And you've got guys who are ticked off, and you know everyone's rumoring this, and all that kind of thing. That's tough sledding. Were you on the plane the whole time, or were you able to go into the...
We were on the plane the whole time. Now, you know, it's like first-class seating everywhere on this plane. It's not like we're bundled up, like, you know, just like packed in like sardines. It's very comfortable. I was able to watch a game for prep. I was able to watch a Raptors game. So I was chilling. I was like, I got my work done. I'm good here. So it was fine to me, but just the, you know, 7:15 a.m. is pretty late, or early, I guess, to get into a place. Now, back in the day, correct me if I'm wrong, Saint, but back when teams would fly commercial, they'd have back-to-backs. They wouldn't fly the night before. Like if you're playing in one city, say you have to go New York to Philadelphia, or I guess maybe they would train that back in the day. But like, say a flight that you would have to make.
Yeah.
You would do it in the morning the next day, right? And just hope that
because there was no charters, nothing. Yeah, nothing available. So you'd have it in the east, especially. The rule was you had to take the first flight out going to that next city. So you know, guys they wind down, whether it's a bite to eat or something to drink or whatever, or just to chit chat. So you don't get, you know, after a long night, you don't get to bed till maybe 1. Well, there were a lot of nights where you had a 5 o'clock wake up or a 5 o'clock departure for the airport, and you'd be on that plane, and, you know, you'd be a bunch of zombies. I could tell a lot of Manute Bol stories that were hilarious. but it was an adventure. And then we'd play 3 in a row in the old days, and then 4 and 5 on the road. And they were all commercials. So it's a different world out there now. And I'll tell you, I was on a flight, I won't say which team I was with, going through customs when Toronto first came in the league. And they came on the bus and the dogs, and they caught somebody with something. And that kept us there for another 2 hours. So people weren't too happy with that individual. But I got to say that going up to Toronto, you know, memories of playing them in the championship and all that. That's a beautiful city. You probably stayed at that Four Seasons down in Yorktown. And that's a beautiful place and a great place to win.
We actually stayed at the Shangri-La, which was lavish as well. I mean, okay. Yeah, I saw that on the itinerary. I was like, oh, yeah, let's have at it. But those kind of games where you have so much, you know, kind of outside factors that could potentially derail you could go one of two ways. Either you come together as a team, fight through it, or the team waves the white flag pretty early on. And they battled through, and I think that's why Kerr called a couple of quick timeouts, kind of wake the team up. You don't see him get super animated and yell at players' faces like he did Jonathan Kuminga after that second timeout, because they just needed to stay attached early. And that was the key. Bob Fitzgerald was telling me before the game, this first quarter is going to be very interesting, because if they're in it after one quarter, we could have a game on our hands. If they fall behind early and the legs aren't coming, this could be a long day.
Yeah, without a doubt. And that's a veteran ex-player and coach that knows what needs to be done with his team. And you know, that was a heck of a performance, considering what had taken place. Those guys did a heck of a job, and you walk away with a great win.
Yeah, it was a great, great win. And it was another big Moses Moody game, talking about earlier, how he kept them afloat offensively in the first half. Then Stephen Kuminga got rolling. And Jonathan Kuminga, I mean, what can you say about this guy? He had the huge dunk on Jakob Poeltl, and just seeing that happen, I sit second row for that game, and so like it was just an absolute, to borrow what might be a Tim Roy phrase, to kind of change his phrase around a little bit, that was an absolute detonation sensation that Kuminga had on Jakob Poeltl. And just overall, I mean, that game, he was really, really good. It only took a couple of threes, 24 points, 6 rebounds. After Kerr got into him in the first time out, in the second time out in the first quarter, then he really started to turn it around.
Well, Kev, we should be trendsetters, setting the tone that he has to get in the next year's dunk contest in San Francisco.
Oh, he has to.
I mean, that would just light the place up. The fans would go crazy. And so with a little coaching, maybe Jay Rich can come back and teach him a few of his tricks. And And he could do a heck of a job. I'm just so happy for that guy. You know, you and I in October and November, we were saying, hey, there's more. And people would stop me and say, why are you being so hard on this guy? I'm not being hard. I'm just telling you the reality is he's very young. He's inexperienced. He's got to go through the trials and tribulations to get to a point where he's comfortable out there. And now he's showing you that you know, there's big time talent, and he's really playing the game at a high level.
Yeah, he is playing at a very, very high level indeed. And it was another big 3-point game for Stephen Curry. He had been 7. Slumping a little bit going into the Madison Square Garden game against the Knicks. So, you know, MSG is always going to bring the best out in Steph, and he hits 8 threes in that game. Then he hit 7 of his first 9 threes against the Toronto Raptors in back-to-back games. He had 15 threes in a matter of 24 hours. That was pretty impressive.
Yeah, you know, in New York there, you just knew. I mean, hey, you know, a star's coming on the floor, and he's had tremendous games there, big-time games. And, you know, he just found a way. But, you know, he can show you that he's human. Some people have thought he's a little bit tired because he's really had to carry a tremendous load, and he's done it in beautiful fashion. But now, you know, when that to me, when you can win when your main guy doesn't have a big-time game, that shows you a lot of growth in your team.
Definitely. That it does for sure. So they took care of Toronto by 15, really pulled away in the second half. I shouldn't mention, Scotty Barnes didn't play in the second half, and he was having a really nice first half as he broke his hand, broke a bone in his hand. So unfortunate there for the Toronto Raptors. Then they went to Boston. This was the primetime game. Gary had his popcorn ready. He was opening up a bottle of red, getting ready to watch the game. And then the first thing that stood out before this got out of hand was that the Warriors were purposefully letting Jaylen Brown shoot. And I want to hear Steve Kerr's explanation, then I want to get your take on this, Gary. So this is what Steve Kerr had to say after the game about why the Warriors sagged off Jaylen Brown.
You know, you try different things. You have to pick your matchups. You know, we wanted Draymond to be able to help on drives and make sure that we weren't giving up easy stuff in the paint. The killer was the transition from the beginning all the way till the end. They got 42 transition points, so you're not winning a game, you know, with that kind of defensive or lack of defensive awareness.
Well, you know, when you come up with a game plan, you know, Draymond said they talked about it maybe in the locker room before the game. But listen, Kev, you know this. You got your assistant coaches. Each guy's in charge of a certain game. You may use five of your coaches, and he might have a help from somebody behind the bench and obviously the video people. And in my day, maybe that's why I'm kind of loony, is that I had to do them all 82. And no wonder I'm punch drunk. But anyway, I'll say this to you. Why do you do that? Because what you do is you make shooters drivers, and you make drivers shooters. So that means Brown's notorious for being great getting in the paint, a great finisher, and then he can give it up if crowded to these great perimeter shooters that they have on that team. So I liked it, frankly. And, you know, you say to yourself, okay, if he makes two, okay, let's stay with it. If he makes three, it's my fault. Fellas, let's go out and play him regular. But, you know, he got going and the game was getting out of hand and, you know, it just fell apart. But I can understand the logic of that. But I was watching Boston this afternoon and against Cleveland, and he had two in the first quarter. So, he's a tremendous Cal player, and I'm happy for him. He's a very, very bright young man and a key piece to that. Boston is taking Cleveland apart, as you and I talk, and they are playing the best basketball in the NBA, and the Warriors probably had their worst game of the year, so it was kind of like the perfect storm.
Yeah, and Cleveland actually just tied the game with a George Niang corner three. Yeah, they were down 18 end of the third quarter.
Well, I switched to the
99-99.
I switched to the Dallas game because I want Dallas to lose, and Indiana's up 9. So
there we go. but to your point though, Saint. In this 11-game win streak, they are winning by an average of 22 points per game.
That's amazing.
I mean, it's just unreal what they're doing.
Yeah, that's the best ever plus-minus thing that they've compiled in the NBA since it's been done, the point differential.
Yeah, it's just incredible what they've been able to do this year. And their net rating is among the best in NBA history. Their offensive rating is the best in NBA history, though I don't know how much stock I put into that just because we're setting new offensive rating records every year.
Yeah.
Steve Kerr had a quote about a no BS kind of rule for officiating in the NBA prior to, I believe it was the Toronto game where he made that point. The Cavaliers actually just went up by three on a Dean Wade three. So, some comeback there for the Cavaliers. They look dead in the water in the first half. But this Boston Celtics team, it feels like, part of me feels like if they don't get it this year? If they don't win the title this year, when are they going to win it?
Well, you know, sometimes you make a couple of moves and it just works. So they'd had enough of Smart, and they go out and get Holiday, and you don't know what a terrific player is till he's on your team. One, he's a phenomenal high-character guy, one of the great perimeter defenders in our league, and stone-cold, strong as new rope. I mean, he is great. And so now he and White formulate the best defensive backcourt in the NBA. Now, in my day, Brown would be a three, he'd be a two, and Tatum would be a three. But now they're both the forward spots, so they're terrific at those four spots of the perimeter. Then they bring in Porzingis, and for me, Kev, here's the key. Can he be around for 16 playoff wins? Because he just has had a history of injuries, but when he's played, he's done a great job, and you got Horford coming off the bench and Pritchard, so they're not extremely deep, but yet they're terrific. And if you were picking a horse race right now, I would say it'd be them against Denver or the Clippers.
Yeah, I think Denver, just the way they're playing, what they did to the Lakers on Saturday night, how they battled back in the second half, and I mean, just Jokic is completely unguardable. I think Nuggets Celtics would be a heck of an NBA Finals. Of course, Golden State Warriors want to
Get the Warriors make
their case as well. But this Boston team, I would just they're looking really good. On the bright side, this was probably the best way to lose. You didn't need to put extra miles on Steph, Clay, and Dre. You could sit them the entire second half. And like the day before, the Lakers lost. The Suns lost that day to the Thunder, so they didn't lose any ground. It was like, I mean, I hate to put a huge PR spin on a 52-point beatdown, but like it was kind of like the perfect day to take a loss like that.
No, you spot on. You got exactly right, and you just move on. And players actually deal with that kind of stuff better than coaches do. They really do. That can really bother a coaching staff to get totally annihilated. But coaches, players just move on saying, who are we playing next? When are we playing? Okay, Wednesday, Bucks, let's go.
Yeah, so yeah, they quickly moved on. Like I said, I was behind the scenes with the team, in the locker room afterward, the coach's locker room. Hey, guys, by the time I had packed up from my broadcast spot, guys have moved on. They were enjoying their post-game spread. They were, getting ready for a long trip back. When the flight attendant said 6 hours and 22 minutes flight time, an audible groan from everybody on the plane. It was a long flight back, but that's how it goes, traveling from Boston to San Francisco. Well, folks, join us live at Chase Center to see the Warriors versus the Chicago Bulls this Thursday, March 7th, presented by Rocket Lawyer. All fans get a Warriors splash towel. Get your tickets now at Warriors.com or call 888-GSW-HOOP. Representatives are standing by. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, taking your calls, 888-957-9570, and looking ahead to this three-game homestand right here on 95.7 The Game.
Each and every member of Dub Nation has a seat at this table.
If everybody would please take your seats.
The Warriors Roundtable has returned on 95.7 The Game.
Knocked it down straight out for about 28 feet.
Now back to Kevin Dana and Gary St. Jean.
All right, let's take a look at our upcoming broadcast presented by Ticketmaster. The Warriors back in action tomorrow against the Milwaukee Bucks. 6:30 on the air, 7 p.m. tip time with Tim Roy and Tom Tolbert. That is Women's Empowerment Month presented by Rakuten. The next night, back end of a B2B against the Chicago Bulls. 6:30 on the air, 7 p.m. tip time presented by Rocket Lawyer. Then they wrap up the three-game homestand against the San Antonio Spurs. Victor Wembanyama coming to town. I'll be at that game as a fan with some of my neighbors wanting to go that game, so I'm going to be rocking there with them. 5 p.m. airtime, 5:30 tip with Tim and Tom on the call, presented by State Farm. Then they play San Antonio again on Monday, March 11th, but in Texas, 4:30 airtime, 5 p.m. tip time, and then they continue along with their Texas trip to the Dallas Mavericks Wednesday, March 13th, 5 p.m. airtime, 5:30 tip time with Tim Roy on the call. As I believe Jason Tatum, I'm just looking at this right now, I think they called a foul on Darius Garland. guarding Jason Tatum on a shot with 0.7 seconds go and the Celtics down one. I don't think he made contact. Cleveland is challenging this call right now. So we'll keep you updated if that it gets resolved anytime soon. But let's talk about the Milwaukee Bucks, because there was all sorts of drama around the team. The new head coach, Doc Rivers, coming in for Adrian Griffin. They started 3-7. The defense improved immediately, but the offense was nowhere to be found. The defense has still been improved, and now they're playing much better out of the All-Star break, and they just beat the Clippers without Giannis and Middleton. Don't know if Giannis is going to be able to play tomorrow. Middleton, they hope to get back on the road trip, but this is going to be game one of the road trip. Not sure he's going to be able to play. But this team is playing better right now than they were before the All-Star break, and significantly better.
Kev, maybe six in a row. And keep in mind, last night, if you watched that game, they played a terrific matchup zone that discombobulated the Clippers. Wonderful job. And how old are you, Saint? I can remember when Doc Rivers was a freshman at Marquette, and he's been coaching in the NBA for more than 20 years. So great. You longer you coach, the more you get questioned. And he's had a great, great career. And the highlight to me of his career, obviously the Boston championship, but the way he handled the situation with the Clippers. Remember that game that we had at the Oakland Coliseum when guys weren't going to play? And
yep.
He was fantastic. So with that said, hey, if I'm that organization, I wouldn't let Giannis play tomorrow. Middleton, I don't know. But, they've got two energy guys. And Bobby Portis had a huge game last night.
Yep.
And Beverly made three threes. Now, Dame, they're putting the ball in his hands a la Portland style and letting him really go. And I think that's good to get him back in that groove. Lopez, I was, after coaching with the Nets years ago, I came back as a consultant. Well, all he was a jump shooter. And now he's Defensive Player of the Year category.
Yep.
So he anchors the middle really well. And you got to respect the way they're playing. They're doing a heck of a job.
Yeah, they really are. And I remember when Brooke Lopez would shoot, he and Robin, I was a manager at Stanford at the same time they were there, they would shoot threes during warm-ups, and the coaches would be pissed. And pissed to the point that one of the assistants, Nick Robinson, came to me, because I would rebound for the guys during warm-ups, and Nick Robinson said to me, if they shoot shots like that, don't give them the ball back. They wanted them parked inside. Now, some of the threes they took were from out of bounds, but Brooke just, he would shoot and shoot, and Robin would do the same. And the coaches weren't happy about it, because back in 2008, bigs, there were it was Dirk Nowitzki and maybe Dirk Nowitzki who would be shooting shots from that range as far as players kind of in that position. And I guess you can call Kevin Durant a 7-footer. You kind of hear different sizes for how tall actually KD really is. But funny you bring up Brooke Lopez. But this team has been playing very well. Cool. Doc has done a nice job. That now they're 9-7 after the coaching change. I saw something last night saying on Twitter, Damian Lillard, you talked about them putting the ball in his hands. He had 20 drives to the basket last night against the Clippers.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Is a lot.
Listen, I said it before, defensively, if you're guarding Dame, you got to get one on him, and then you got to get somebody right behind that guy. Because he's going to launch it, like Steph does. He's the second best shooter, perimeter wise, in the league. So you make him a driver, and you live with the fact that he made some. So 40 plus last night, he's feeling good about himself, and they've. I still think Boston is better, but we still got a little ways to go. We've got 6 weeks before the playoffs starts, but that's a darn good team. And then Chicago comes to town.
Yeah, here's the thing about Chicago. I felt like everybody in the literati of the NBA just poo-pooed what they did at the trade deadline by keeping their team together. It was in style to say that the Bulls, they don't know what they're doing. They should completely blow this team up. They're making a huge mistake. My philosophy, and I'm not a front office guy, I'm not a reporter, but if you have a chance to make the playoffs, you got to take that chance. I don't care. The middle, everyone talks about how bad the middle is in the NBA. It's another one of those highfalutin takes to have on the NBA. You don't want to be stuck in the middle. Well, the middle means you're fighting for a playoff spot. Like, not everyone can win the NBA title every year. Only one can. And that doesn't mean, like, for a team like the Chicago Bulls, like, they darn near made the playoffs last year. They won in Toronto as the 10. They had a lead in the fourth quarter in Miami. Like, that playoff run to the finals doesn't happen if Max Strus doesn't get on an absolute heater in that play-in game against the Chicago Bulls. And, like, they're comfortably in ninth now. They're 29-32. Yep. Kobe White has been balling this year.
Oh.
He's averaging almost 20 points per game. He had a big game last night. They still got some really good players. And I just don't I understand there are cap concerns and, you know, you want to get better draft picks and all that. But not everyone can be horrible and get a draft pick, because there's only one number one pick and there's only one NBA champion. Like, you can't avoid the middle, and the middle, to me, isn't that bad of a place.
Well said, and I'll share this scouting report with you. Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner from yep. Michael's days, and before that, Artis Gilmore, terrific guy, also owns the White Sox. His son is now running it. Well, the philosophy is very conservative. They fill up that Chicago stadium, and they filled it up during Michael's day in the old place. And this new one, it's one of the biggest in the whole league. They're great basketball fans there. So you look at it, and you know, DeRozan wants to stay there. They wanted two firsts for Caruso. Vucevic, Drummond, they offered 3 or 4 seconds. They didn't make the deals. DeSumo, the Illinois kid, playing great now. And White, yeah. as you said, might be most improved in the league. I read a great story about him, his confidence and his belief in himself, and the fact that he hadn't been playing that good, but he didn't lose the belief in himself, and he kept working hard. He's got a lot of respect. You lose a guy like LaVine and you're still competitive, I tend to side with you. I think you're right, and that's not an easy game. You know, Drummond can walk into 20 rebounds. Caruso, yeah. he, you know, you look at him, the best compliment I can give the guy is Steve talked about him for the Olympic team.
Yeah.
He's a winner. The guy just plays winning basketball. And, you know, my son Greg was with him in L.A. and just absolutely loves the guy. So that will not be an easy game. And then we get to see Victor come in, and my gosh, he's been phenomenal lately, and that team's playing better. So you don't take that game lightly. They're playing a lot better. Great job by Pop. They're really playing at a much higher level. So it's three games, and the optimist that Kevin and Saint are, I think they're going to win all three.
Yeah, I think if Giannis doesn't play tomorrow, and
that's a big if. But
I don't like you. He saw how he came up lame in warm-ups yesterday. How he came up, you know, like a little gimpy. Like, I'm not sure it'd be a good idea for him to play tomorrow. From an organizational standpoint for Milwaukee, like, if he doesn't play, no Middleton, Golden State has to win that game. And by default, they got to beat the Bulls and the Spurs too. So look, 3-0 would make them 35-28, and that would inch them that much closer to the 8 seed, to the 7, to the 6. And even if you don't get to 6, if you get to 7 or 8, to have two cracks at getting into the playoffs and at least one home game at Chase Center, that's a lot better than being 9th or 10th.
Well, Kev, you know this. I don't know if all the fans know. If you get 7 or 8, you win one, you go.
Yep.
Whereas if you're in 9 or 10, you got to win two games.
Yep.
And that's hard. Because it's like March Madness. You know, yep. you gotta step up, and that's a tough task. The matchups are really important, but I think they're gonna get there. And who knows? They might get even higher.
Yeah, potentially. You know, fifth isn't that far ahead of them either, the New Orleans Pelicans. So it could happen. Well, that will do it for us tonight, folks. A big thank you to Marika Kleto and R.C. Davis on the Warriors side of things for helping us with our sponsor reads. A big thank you to Mark Grandy behind the glass. Did a really nice job on the Warriors pre-game show. Had a chance to listen to him before my Celtics broadcast. Did a bang-up job, as always. So for Gary St. Jean, I'm Kevin Danis saying sayonara. We'll talk to you next week for Warriors Roundtable right here on 95.7 The Game.
You've been listening to the Warriors Roundtable.
Curry brings it through, one hand, three, up and good!
On the exclusive home of your Golden State Warriors.
That playful and nailed it!
95.7 The Game.
For tickets, call 888-GSW-HOOP.